Good morning. If we can come on in and take a seat, we'll get started. Try to stay on schedule today. I'm Dan Gaddis. I'm chair of the Texas Southwest Cattle Raisers Property Rights and Tax Committee for this past year. Where's Brian? Here's Brian. He's my vice chair. Brian actually does all the real work, which is really great. I like that part of the organizational structure. Many of y'all already know that TSCRA has been working with our counterparts at Farm Bureau and Texas Wildlife Association on eminent domain reform. We worked on it a session ago, had to pull out because we just weren't getting the results that we needed, and we're back at it again this session. We've got many other stakeholder groups that we've been working with as well, you know, to finally bring fairness, transparency, and accountability to our state's eminent domain and condemnation process. It does not exist today. The landowner is not on equal footing with those who want to take our land, especially those who want to take our land to make a profit for their own company. And so we're working hard for our membership and for all the landowners in Texas to try to bring some accountability to that section. This morning's speakers are going to help us understand the progress so far and what might happen in this session that's going on right now in the Texas legislature. I will tell you that there's been movement in the last 24, 48 hours on those issues. We've been deeply involved, and we're going to have Jim come up here and talk, Caleb come up here and talk, who have been intimately involved in those discussions with the Lieutenant Governor's Office, with Senator Kolkhorst, and with Representative Burns, who's been carrying our water, so to speak, on this issue. This morning, Jim Bradbury and Caleb McLaurin will tell you more about the bills and process. Jim Bradbury is an attorney whose practice focuses on land, environmental, water, and regulatory matters, including water policy issues facing rural Texas. Jim has a focus on the legal and policy issues facing Texas property owners and producers, working with statewide agricultural associations on legislative and regulatory matters, including filing several amicus briefs to the Texas Supreme Court on issues of statewide importance. Jim's actually filed many of those on behalf of this organization. When we find issues that are in front of the Supreme Court that we want to take a position on and feel are important. He is an adjunct professor at the Texas A&M School of Law here in Fort Worth, teaching ag law, natural resources, and eminent domain policy. He regularly speaks on landowners' rights, water issues, as they affect Texas public policy, and serves on the board of the Texas Land Trust Council and Policy Committee of the Texas Ag Land Trust, working to conserve working farms and ranches. Caleb McLaurin, he's a guy that kind of works for TSCRA. We're not sure how much longer he'll stick around. He's with Government and Public Affairs Department. When you hand somebody an introductory paper and you put it at 800 font so I don't have to use my glasses, that's what you're going to get, Caleb. He is based in our association's Austin office, where he's been spending a lot of long days and late evenings as the legislative process has gone on, meeting on this specific topic and many other topics. You know, this, while eminent domain is important to us, it's not the only issue that we are watching and we're trying to stay abreast of in the Texas legislature. I spent four terms in the legislature, 8 years myself as a state rep, and I always told my constituents, I know we meet, you know, 180 days or, you know, every 2 years. I'd rather we meet 2 days, you know, every 140 to 150 years. I think we'd be all better off sometimes with that. But he's been spending a lot of time. Jim will discuss the protections of SB 421 and HB 991, which are the two bills on eminent domain, and why there is opposition to those protections, which sometimes amazes me. And Caleb will expand on the political climate surrounding these efforts. Before we start, I certainly want to introduce Casey Cornelius with Frost Bank. Casey, Frost Bank is sponsoring this session, and we certainly appreciate that. Casey, come on up and say a few words, and then we'll get started.
Thanks, Dan. I want to keep this brief. We want to hear about the topic, but I just want to say we're very excited to be here. My name is Casey Cornelius. I'm with Frost Bank and our corporate banking group here in Fort Worth. I think this is the third year that Frost has sponsored an eminent domain session. I think the room is always very big, and it's always a very well-attended event. I know this is a very important issue that's very passionate for a lot of the folks in the room. Frost Bank has been around for 150 years, based in San Antonio, and working with business owners and community leaders like yourself on important issues. And we're very excited to sponsor this and look forward to the discussion. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Casey, thank you very much. We really do appreciate Frost Bank and everything that they do for this association on many different fronts, not only what they do here for sponsoring this. Jim and your lackey, Caleb, if y'all want to come on front and talk a little bit.
Well, thank you for that endorsing introduction, Dan. If y'all don't mind, I would like to start this morning with a little bit of sober truth. And that is that there are 1,000 people moving to Texas every single day. 1,000 people moving to Texas every single day. And guess what? You can't fit them all in downtown Fort Worth. You can't fit them all in downtown Houston. Those metropolitan areas are growing out, and those areas don't have infrastructure. And then you have to get all those utilities and all that stuff to the new homes that they're building. I live outside in a suburb of Austin in a little town called Kyle, Texas. There wasn't hardly anyone there 10 years ago. They just bought 700 acres directly behind my back fence, and they're going to stack I don't know how many thousand people's in there, and there's developments like that every couple of miles on the road that I live on. And all those people need electricity, and they need oil products. They need a lot of those things. And so guess what that takes? That takes infrastructure. And a lot of those infrastructure projects have condemnation authority. And not all of us want to just sell our property for a power line or something to go across it. So condemnation is something that the state of Texas grants to private entities, and it's something that's utilized every day. And I don't think anyone in here necessarily likes it, but it's just how our state works. But I want to tell you a statement that I've heard repetitively over the past couple of years said by the other side, which is, right now, the eminent domain process works really good. Does anybody in here think that the current eminent domain process works really good? So if it isn't us that's saying it, where is it coming from? Well, it's coming from people like the Texas Oil and Gas Association and all their members. The electric companies and all of their companies that are putting in these transmission lines, they think it works really good. I tell you, it's not because they think that treats the landowners fairly. They don't think it holds them accountable. They don't think that that's a real transparent process that the public gets to look at and just nod their head and go, yeah, man, y'all are really doing it right. The reason they think that process is working well is because it works well for their bottom line. And so that is what we're up against. And as y'all know, nobody raise their hand. Nobody thinks it's working right. We know that Texas is primarily privately owned. There's hardly no federal government lands in the state of Texas, so all that infrastructure is going across somebody's place. And we need to make sure that if they're going across someone's place, they're granted that eminent domain authority as for the public good, that we, the public, should have some minimum protections when that comes across our ranch, across our homestead. And so this has been a multi-session, multi-year process. As Dan mentioned, we've been working on this for a couple of sessions, and we're having a very difficult time getting something meaningful done. And so I know a lot of people are saying, well, why don't y'all just tell them that this is really bad? We're telling them. And I'll tell you where we started. We had a bill a couple sessions ago that had attorney fees in it and said, look, if you condemn somebody and they come back and they fight you and the court rules that it's going to be some multiplier, you know, that you offered them half of what their property is actually worth, you should pay the attorney's fees for the landowners that had to go to court to defend the value of their property. And they're like, no, just completely unworkable. They made us to look like communists or something. So we came back again last session with a whole mirage of things that we wanted changed and fixed and didn't get anywhere. And so we began to realize that I don't know that our politicians have the best interests of the property owners in the state of Texas in mind when they're sitting there taking a vote. I'll tell you what they do have in mind, how they're going to get reelected next election cycle. And so they don't want to have to take a difficult vote at all. And a difficult vote is one where you put the private property owners in the state of Texas against oil and gas, because they are a big player. When you look at our economy, manufacturing, agriculture, and the oil and gas industry is the top three of the list. So they don't want any of us to ever fight and say, we have to have an agreement. We have to do something. So we're like, okay, we realize we can't fix all the problems with it, but we have to focus our efforts. How are we going to do it? And so we spent a long time over the past couple of years saying, what is the absolute most importance? And we came up with these three words that y'all saw on the sign that Dan mentioned, that this process should be transparent, it should be fair, and it should hold companies accountable who are utilizing this public process that the government granted them to take your property for less than what it's worth. We think that's reasonable. And so there's a couple of ways that we can do it. We spent months in the development stages, and I'll let Jim go into the languages of what we are at, where we are at today. That changes daily. But we spent months and we came out with these concepts. We'll say, look, fairness. We need to make sure that when somebody comes across your property, you have some minimum easement terms so that they know that when they go and tear your place up, they put it back how you found it. Think about double ditching method. A lot of people don't realize when a pipeline company comes across your place, if they go dig all the stuff out and they put it in one big pile, so the topsoil's here and the stuff underneath is here, rock on top, then that dozer comes and shoves it back in the hole at the bottom. You know, I'm from East Texas, so it just looks like that, well, man, somebody needs to work on their pastures a little bit. But especially when you get out in the hill country, it looks like there's white rock roads going through the middle of a ranch, and you're like, what are those roads doing that's going to nowhere? It's like, oh, that's just some poor landowner. It didn't know to ask that pipeline company to do double ditching, which means you separate the topsoil out, put the other stuff over here, and that way you end up with the topsoil back on top. Why do you have to know? Why must you ask an attorney, what should I ask for those guys to put the land back the way they found it? I don't think that's too much to ask. That should be some minimum standards. And so those easement terms that I'm referring to, and I'll let Jim go into more detail, that's the kind of stuff, these minimums that we want to require of these condemning entities whenever they're coming across your place and whenever they condemn you. So that's how we dealt with the fairness aspect of it. When you talk about transparency, you look at the other state agencies, they always have public meetings and public hearings, and they do this stuff. The public has an ability to look in. Well, who's condemning your place? There's for-profit companies that only have to answer to their board of directors and their shareholders, and all they care about is profit. Where is the public's opportunity to weigh in, watch what they're doing, get input, and ask questions of these guys? Because there's a lot of people, I know Jim and I have spoke at a lot of little things across the country on eminent domain, and people don't realize that you don't get notified if that condemning entity decides to come and sue you and condemn your property. And they say, so they don't tell us? It's like, no, you'll find out eventually, but you're not going to find out the day of. Why is that? And why don't these people have the right to know that process? We should have a public meeting where people can gather together, talk to one another, and talk about the process. Hey, here's what's going on in my place. What are they doing with you? And just make this an open, governmental, transparent process like you have in state agencies. And then the last thing is on accountability, and that's holding those guys accountable that's been granted this supreme privilege to come and take your property under this privilege granted to them by the state of Texas. They should be accountable to not lowball you and give you pennies on the dollar for what you are owed, because it is a fair market value of your place. Why should you, as a landowner, subsidize the profits of this big company? So that's what we pared the bill down to. So this is all leading up into this session. So we have a great bill. We have it all set up. Now let me ask you, does everyone think those are three reasonable things to ask for? So did we. Now you elect your politicians, your elected officials, so you would think, if y'all think that's reasonable, that we're not asking a whole lot from these condemning entities, that your elected officials will think so also. And I think, on concept, maybe they do. Maybe they do. But when this bill was filed, first rattle out the gate, you see social media blow up, the news media blow up, talking about how greedy landowners are just trying to stifle the oil and gas industry. They want to make sure that all those oil and gas dollars don't go to the rainy day fund, which helps fund roads and helps make sure kids have good books to read in their public school system. And so they just, these greedy, land-rich, big-pocketed landowners just put more money in their pockets. That's the type of rhetoric that we hear from the other side. And so now all of a sudden, we look like the mean old criminals coming asking something of the poor, poor oil and gas industry. And believe it or not, a lot of people buy into that. Y'all are looking at me like I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, that's what we see at the Capitol. So we go up there, and we're on the House side. We're trying to go through negotiations, and things are going incredibly slow. On the Senate side, I will say that things are moving a lot quicker. Senator Kohlkorst told us at one point, no negotiations. No, this is good, it's reasonable, it's fair. This is something that the state of Texas should do to protect our citizens. This is how the cow's going to eat the cabbage. And she held to her word. About a month ago now, we had a committee hearing on the Senate side. So each bill, they'll have to be heard or be read for the first time, referred to a committee. The committee hears it. The committee will have to vote it out before it ever gets to the floor of whichever chamber they're in. And then it has to go to the other side and do those same things. So it's a very long process. And the way to kill a bill is to make sure that process takes a long time and you run out of time. And so we looked at Senator Kohlkorst, and she's obviously trying to hurry things along, which is really great for landowners. And she has a hearing on that bill that we worked with her on and that she filed. And there were over 100 people register on that bill. Over 50 people, additional people, came to Austin to testify on it. I want to say the numbers were about 27 property owners that came and testified on behalf of property owners saying this is a really great bill. About 22 or so of them came to talk about how that bill was awful for the state of Texas. So there's a lot of you in this room, and there's a lot of landowners across the state of Texas. But when we go over in that Capitol building, there's a lot of hired guns on the other side that are standing up to testify. And all of a sudden, it looks pretty evenly keeled that it's just these greedy landowners on one side and a bunch of poor oil and gas industry that's just trying to help the public by putting more money in the pockets of the elderly and the homeless and all of the other sob stories that they come up with. Now, what's amazing to me is there was some senators who had some issues with some of the language. We changed some stuff around. That bill, because Senator Kohlkorst kind of forced a vote, that bill got voted out 9-0 in our favor, which is really great. Huge success for the landowners. And I will say, though the numbers were somewhat evenly keeled, I will say that the stories of you, the landowners that have been impacted by condemnation, resonated, and we won the day on that hearing. Everyone was floored by the testimony that they heard from producers. However, it's politics. And so what happened after that vote? Your state senators went to their lieutenant governor, the most powerful man in Texas, and said, look, your power's in your hands. If we are forced to vote, we will vote with the property owners because they're the ones that elect us. We realize that. We'll get crucified at home if we don't. But the oil and gas people, they give us a lot of money. That buys a lot of yard sign that those property owners have in their yard. So if we are forced to make the decision, We'll probably vote with the property owner, but we don't want to. You're going to hurt us. And these are, you know, Lieutenant Governor is a Republican. And so I'm talking about a lot of Republicans that came up to him and said, we saw the big race we had with Beto. We saw all the seats that the Republicans lost. You don't want that to happen again, do you, Lieutenant Governor? Because if you make us take a tough vote, you're going to carve up and beat up and bruise the Republican Party. You need to make these guys sit in a room and agree to something. Well, guess what? The other side doesn't want a bill. That's why the last two sessions, whenever we were told, y'all have to agree, this is too tough of an issue for us to vote on, the bill never did make it. So now, here we are again. I will say that the lieutenant governor does realize that the only reason he's still the lieutenant governor is because the rural people got out and voted. So that is one thing that we have in our favor. But regardless, he's got pressure from all of his senators saying, you need to make these guys come to agreement. And so he called us into the principal's office, as I say. He said, Cattle Raisers, Farm Bureau, Wildlife Association, y'all are going to come in here and meet with the Coalition for Critical Infrastructure, the electric companies, the Texas Oil and Gas Association, and Texas Pipeline Association, and y'all are going to sit right here, and I'm going to sit here with you for a bunch of it, and I'm going to make y'all duke it out and come up with something that's agreeable and agree to it. We had come to an agreement on the easement terms. We finally kind of got there, so we thought. And then, so you have the other provision, which is talking about some kind of accountability, like making those guys pay if they use that process to lowball you. Now, that has taken many different forms as we've gone through this. It started out as a penalty. If they don't pay you up front and come to find out the final reward is significantly over, then they have to pay you a penalty for it. Then it became a premium for for sale, which says, if you're going to come and condemn a piece of property, you have to pay me the fair market value of it and give me a little bit of extra as a premium because I didn't really want to give up that property. So that's a for sale, and that's something that happens in a lot of other states that has a lot of oil and gas exploration. And all of a sudden, he said, well, we went back and forth. He goes, I agree that producers should be required or should receive fair market value for their property. That is not required under the law today. In condemnation, yes, that's what the courts decide. But a company can offer and negotiate and try to get you to sign for a lot less than fair market value. And so he agreed that fair market value should be offered up front, which is a good win for us. But he said, we got to do away with these premiums. And that's what he said. Y'all two, neither one of y'all are happy about this, but this is the deal. And so he kind of told us that's how it was going to be if it was going to be heard on the Senate floor. He said, yes, sir, okay. That's something that neither one of us necessarily like, but that's what you're here to do is to make us negotiate and come to this agreed-to position. Now you have the public meetings. That seems like the easiest part of this trifecta, that you just have a meeting, allow the public to get together and talk to one another, and you present the information that about your company, about the condemnation process. Believe it or not, that was the hill that the other side has stood up ready to die on. They say it's just completely undoable. We can't have it. We don't, what it is, they don't want landowners to talk. They don't want you to be sitting there and see your neighbor over there like, oh, yeah, they gave me $100 a rod. It's like, well, that's funny. They gave me $500 a rod. They don't want transparency. They do well operating in the dark. And so we've been going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for weeks. And I mean, this week, I think we spent three. Arthur Uhl, second vice president and treasurer, was there on behalf of cattle raisers through a lot of those negotiations this past couple of weeks. I think this week we spent two or three days in the lieutenant governor's office. Last week there was 3 days in the lieutenant governor's office. This isn't even a priority bill by the Senate. And we're using the office room, the kind of war room, I guess you could call it, where they're supposed to go have their come to Jesus meeting on these big priority bills. And we're taking up all the time in there. And a lot of that time is spent talking about meetings. And we've got four differences, which Bradbury can throw out. And finally, what day is today? Saturday? I guess it was Thursday. Just Thursday, they said, well, we're just going to have one more meeting. Come in here at 8 o'clock. I think we finally left at 5:30 that evening. to talk about five small little differences on one section of this bill. And Senator Kolkhorst and Lieutenant Governor staff finally told the other side, look, guys, y'all have to give a little bit. These property owners have given a whole lot. Come up with some other solutions to these five deals. They took about an hour break, and they came back in, and we said, what have you got? They said, well, on the first one, we can't offer anything. Can't offer anything. So Senator Kolkhorst goes, okay, let's set that one aside. What do you got on the second one? Well, we can't offer anything there. Okay, we'll set that one aside. And then she started making baseball analogies. All right, you know, you only get three strikes and you're out. Well, on the third one, we really don't have anything we can offer. What about the fourth one? Nothing. What about the fifth one? Not really. And so guess what? We said, look, we don't have, it's not a huge crucial issue on the fifth issue. We'll accept your language. Can we deal on the other four? No. So after sitting there from 8 o'clock till 5:30, after having two meetings about meetings that lasted a couple of days, now we're sitting here trying to negotiate on these five pieces, and they will not give one red inch. So here, and the lieutenant governor said, y'all are going to have to give until you hurt. He already told us what the other deal was going to be. He thought this we should be able to work out amongst ourselves. So Senator Kolkhorst and lieutenant governor's put in another position. They've got to just call it. Whatever they say is what's going to go. And I'll tell you, I left there about 5:30. Jeremy and I left Austin about 5:30 Thursday. And they said, we'll draft some language up and we'll send it to you and we'll let you know what the bill's going to be. We plan to vote it out on Monday. So this Monday, they plan to vote it out. But this is kind of an Obamacare, Nancy Pelosi scheme. We don't know what they're voting out just yet. But they plan to vote something out on Monday. And we've yet to see it. But we know that it's just going to, there's five things, four things in there that we don't know which way it's going to go, in our favor, in their favor, or somewhere in the middle. Now, the reason we negotiated is because the lieutenant governor said, my poor, poor state senators, they don't want to take a tough vote. We need something agreed to. So y'all need to come together and agree to something. Now, again, we got the version we like voted out of the committee 9-0. I think we can get the votes to get off the floor, but the lieutenant governor's trying to protect his senators, and we're trying to work towards an agreement. It's going to be more difficult on the House side to get a bill passed than it is on the Senate side. So in our eyes, we're like, look, we get an agreement on this side. We know what we're going to get. We send it to the other side, and hopefully it's a pretty sure shot because we have an agreement, an agreed-to bill. At least we don't oppose it is all we're asking from the other side. And so I just asked. I don't know if any of y'all know Todd Staples, former ag commissioner. He's also the president and CEO of Texas Oil and Gas Association right now. He and I were sitting directly across the table from one another, and him and Cesarek, the guy, the president of the Pipeline Association, I looked at him, I said, guys, what is our goal here? Are we going to have an agreement, like whenever the lieutenant governor or Senator Kolkhorst tells us what this bill is going to be? Can we all sign a piece of paper saying we agree to it, or at least we don't oppose it? They said, no. I said, okay. Well, we've got two sections we've already negotiated over the past couple of months. A lot of work's put into it. Can we at least acknowledge and appreciate the fact that Senator Kolkhorst and the lieutenant governor's put a lot of time in it? Representative Dwayne Burns has put a lot of time in it on the House side. All of us have given a lot until it hurts both of us. Can we at least sign off and say, on those two parts of the bill that we've already negotiated, that we're good? And Todd goes, man, I don't think so. So who are we negotiating against? If you're negotiating with someone that will never, ever, ever agree, that is what we face in the political side of things in Austin. We're forced to work towards an agreement that it appears will never happen. Now, when we get this bill language back, they said they'll look at it maybe. So, hey, I'm hoping and praying that we're all going to be surprised on Monday and they're all going to like, man, this is a great idea, and sign off on the thing. I'm not optimistic. So where do we go from here? Because I'll tell you, on Monday, this negotiated language that's pared down, that's not nearly as good as the language that they voted out 9-0, it's going to come zinging off the Senate floor. But that bill has to then start over at the bottom on the House side. And if it's not agreed to, the other side's going to act like this is a new day and the start of a new bill negotiation, but we're starting where we already gave till it's painful. And they're going to try to negotiate from there and carve and pick from that point moving forward. And the problem that we've got is we've been put in this position because our politicians don't want to make a difficult decision. And so politically, that's where we are. And I'm sure we'll ask you this a couple more times, but please stay engaged with your elected officials because we need all the help that we can get. Now, again, I don't know exactly what will be voted out on Monday, but we have a pretty good idea. And because I'm not an attorney and I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, I'm going to ask the sharpest tool in the shed to get up now, Jim Bradbury, come and explain to you exactly what we think will be in the bill. Jim?
All right, good morning. Caleb, if this doesn't work out, I think you could be a preacher at a pretty good-sized church. That was good. Let me make some comments to fill in where he left off. From my perspective, I've been counsel to the association and the coalition last session and this session. So when Jeremy, Caleb, Arthur, Bobby, of those are sitting in there, I'm sitting beside them, but I'm the one that goes back at night and turns these drafts around, and I've just about worn out one laptop and two printers revising all this stuff, everything that industry is asking for, all of these changes. But some comments at the beginning, Caleb alluded to this. What counts in this process is not that we're right, not that landowners need change. What counts is the votes of the legislators, okay? We knew the industry would come at this hard. And they've come at it hard, and they've spent a lot of money. There was a CEO of a pipeline company that I won't name that flew down in his private jet Wednesday night just because we were meeting with the lieutenant governor. That's just the way that game is played. But what matters is the votes of the legislators, and that's why I do not want you to leave this room without committing to yourself that you are going to reach out to your state rep and your state senator. Because what Caleb explained to you, this is what happened in the Senate. We filed our bill. The Senate State Affairs heard it, and we won that hearing. We loaded the boat. Arthur, Dan Gaddis, Bobby, Richard Thorpe came, everybody. We had landowners, and we rolled in that hearing so much that Todd Staples in the industry was just seething at the back. So we delivered there. Then we submitted per request. Each side was asked to deliver their best version of that bill to Senator Kolkhorst, and we did. And she submitted our version for the committee sub, which is the new version of the bill, right? She selected your version, the one you wanted. She delivered for you, and that committee voted 9-0. But then this is where it starts, right? This is where I need you. Then the industry got mad. They got nervous because this was looking very real for them. So then they went and started talking in those dark shadows to the senators saying, "Whoa, boy, you know, you don't want to make that vote. That's really..." And they got wobbly. And so then they went to the lieutenant governor. And that's expected, but that's where you come in, right? We can tell you what's going on, and it's an interesting story. It might be a good movie to watch late at night someday. But you've got to call them, right? Because they listen to you. So if you know your senator, you know your rep, or you know somebody else's senator or rep, right now the Senate is the game. So call a senator. If you've given them some money, say, "Hey, this is important to me." And they'll say, "Hey, thank you very much for your call." And then say, no, this is important to me and my association. So commit yourself to do that. Because that's what really matters. Because the oil and gas folks, they're there every day, every morning, every coffee, all the time. And we're busy people, so we don't do that. So put that on your list. Now let me tell you what's in this legislative package. Explain this just a little bit. Going into this session with our coalition partners, Farm Bureau and Texas Wildlife, I drafted up about 8 different potential pursuit angles that we would do this session. We met repeatedly with the officers of the organization and selected 3 main concepts to pursue this session. First is the minimum easement terms. You heard me talk about that last year, but that's extremely important. Every landowner is presented some junky form of base easement by the company that doesn't protect them. This is a state process, but there is no state standard right now for what's in that easement term. They can hand them any piece of junk that will impact their family and their property forever. So this section of the bill is very, very important. It's got a section for pipelines and a section for electrics. And it will require any company in that industry that is a private corporation to deliver a form of easement to the landowner that contains all of those terms. How many pipelines are in there, the size of the pipelines, the products, how to handle fences and gates, insurance. Do you know right now that a company can condemn your property, lay a project in there, and they are not legally required to have insurance during construction or permanently when that line's going through the property? That will now be required in these minimum easement terms. So every landowner in Texas is going to be getting the same base form. Another big important fact is if they condemn, if you go through negotiations and they're actually going to file to condemn, now the company will have to incorporate those minimum terms into their condemnation action, which is not law right now. They can basically condemn the property with no base protection. So that section of the bill is extremely important. Orientation of the legislation this time, we decided politically and practically to limit this to private corporations. Because when I talk to groups, landowners across the state of Texas, when you ask them what they are most angry about at eminent domain, it is private corporations that have shareholders that are taking private property for profit. So all of this legislation is limited to private corporations, okay? While there are problems with cities, counties, TxDOT, all that other stuff, right now this is targeted to the biggest source of the problem. So we've got our minimum easement terms. The second big section is the public meeting section. Right now, anybody in the way of the Permian Highway pipeline? Big pipeline coming from far west Texas going to Houston, cutting through Fredericksburg and some very high dollar, very beautiful property. But it's caused a lot of opposition out there, and it's frankly very helpful to our package because it's very visible. When a private corporation goes through and does a project of that size, they're using the powers of the state of Texas, but they are in no way legally obligated to conduct a public meeting, right? Your school board's going to do something, they're going to have a meeting, your city council, any organization's going to have a meeting to exchange information. So this piece of the legislation is probably the biggest and the hardest for the other side to swallow. Because what it will require is if they're going to condemn property in any county for an electric transmission line or a pipeline, they will have to conduct a public meeting for the people who are on that line at a public location where everybody can come. They will have to explain the project. They will have to demonstrate how and why they have the right of eminent domain. They'll have to explain how they have calculated the compensation. Does it include damage to the remainder? They'll have to stand in front of the audience, and there's a prescribed agenda that they will have to follow. And they will not be able to condemn anyone until they have completed that meeting. They will send an advance notice to the county judge in that county to say, we are about to start negotiating for property in your county. It may sound simple to you, but this is a big concept. Because the biggest part of the problem for landowners in this is stress, right? When you have a big project blow through, they come really fast. They send these land people out, and they're flying letters, and then they're just calling on the phone, and you have people like you who are sitting there in their kitchen table busy, and they feel like they're handling it alone. It's just them and this right-of-way agent. And that is, frankly, a hell of a place to be when a company is exercising the rights of the state of Texas. This should be more of a state process. So part of the goal with this public meeting is it gets people in rural Texas to do what they're familiar with, which is to sit in a room like this, right? You go, there are your friends, there are your neighbors, there are people you know, people who are in the same situation as you are, who can talk and say, maybe we negotiate together. Maybe we talk about what price you may ask for, what price I may ask for. And that's a terrific thing. One, because it provides a comfort zone for the landowners to be able to exchange information. It brings it out of the shadows. It reduces the stress. But the part of it I like most is it will mandate these private corporations who are using state powers to take private property to begin to act like a state actor. If you're going to use those powers, you have an obligation to the citizens and the property owners to stand in front of them and demonstrate what it is you're going to do. At the conclusion of the meeting, they will have to answer questions from the landowners. The landowners can come. If your land is leased, your lessee can come. Your property manager can come. They can all come to the meeting, and there'll be a microphone, and you may ask questions, and they have to answer those questions. That's a big change. And in these meetings that Caleb talked about, we've been locked in the lieutenant governor's office for seem like 2 weeks. And if you happen to see Arthur Uhl today, or Hughes Abel, or Bobby McKnight, tell them thank you. Because this is not a deal where we draft the legislation, you file it, and the senators and the reps just carry it forward and you kind of check in and buy whiskey for the legislators. That's not this kind of deal. This is armed combat. I'm right, aren't I, Arthur? I thought you would agree. These officers are in there. They kick the lawyers out of the room. They don't want me in there, and they don't want the other lawyer in there, which is fine, but your officers are the ones in there on the front line with the lieutenant governor looking at them across the table, trying to figure this thing out. Good news is we're on the high radar. Because of this Permian pipeline and because these companies have created such an enormous problem out there, there are probably 35 eminent domain bills this session. That wasn't the case last session. We warned them your problem is going to get worse if you don't solve it, and that's happened. But this is the lead one. It has risen to the top. It's sitting there in the lieutenant governor's office. The third piece, the big piece of the legislation, is dealing with lowball offers. It's a chronic problem. There's no standard for it right now. There is a standard for your last offer. You get an appraisal. But they don't have to give you anything with the initial offer. And believe it or not, there is not a statute that says you have to give an offer of market price. It's just whatever. So these land agents, in the meetings we've had, I've asked them, I said, well, how do y'all negotiate that? And we said, well, we just tell the land agents to just figure it out, take a shot. So even if they know they owe you $25,000, some landman from Oklahoma can take a shot at $2,500. There's no standard. So this section of the bill would impose a standard on the company to ensure that the first offer meets market value for the part taken and the damage to the remainder, which is the big piece. And they will have to specify in that offer what they're assigning to the damage to the remainder. Because if you've been through this before, you know their view is it's always this, right? There's no damage to the remainder. But right, if they're going to do that, they're going to have to put in a document that everybody will see, we're not paying you any damage to the remainder. Those are the three big pieces. A couple of others, which are important too, in a sense of fairness. Right now, the way this works, they all have lawyers. The other side has lawyers from the beginning, okay? And then when they go to start condemning, they call the judge, they file the action against you and your family. They don't tell you initially. Then the special commissioners are appointed. Then they call the special commissioners. and they set the time and date of the special hearing that's going to impact the property owner. And all that has happened, and they've never bothered to call the property owner or involve them in the conversation with the judge or the special commissioners. And that's wrong. We've got a piece in this legislation right now that will ensure if they're going to call the judge, they're going to talk to the special commissioners, they're going to involve the landowner. The landowner needs to be aware of what's going on, and that's a sense of fairness. The last piece in the legislation deals with this damage to the remainder. If you understand this, you realize that's the big problem. Everybody can calculate what the 150-foot strip is worth. It's the damage to your residual property. And right now, we in this package for legislation, we say that the special commissioners, when they're assigning damages, need and must consider the impact of the size of the transmission line, the voltage of the transmission line, the size of the pipeline, the pressure of the pipeline in the damage to the remainder. And they don't like that, right? Because if you've been through a special commissioner's hearing, they just want to like, this is all happy. You know, we'll just bury this pipeline and reseed it, and then you'll never hear from us again. This gets this formally on the table at the special commissioner's hearing for the landowner to begin talking about that. So those are the pieces of our legislation. Right now, if you look, the House and the Senate, the filed bills are basically the same, so you can look at the Senate bill or the House bill and sort of study this on your own. I encourage you to do it. Although it's in legislative speak, that minimum easement terms will make perfect sense to you. If you read through that, you'll say, yeah, that's exactly what I need in my easement. Now, to round this out, and if we have a little time just to take a couple of questions, if you have the time, and even if you don't have the time, I encourage you to queue up and watch the video of the Senate State Affairs hearing on this bill. Because you'll see two things. One, you will see the argument that the industry is putting forward, that there is no problem here. And it'll make you mad, and it makes everybody mad. But what you will also see is real landowners who drove to Austin on their own time to go in the Senate chamber and testify and say, this is wrong. We need you to fix it. And you will see your officers of this organization who testified. And I will tell you, the last two people to testify were Dan Gaddis and Arthur Uhl. And you could hear a pin drop when that was done. They ended that hearing perfectly. But that will dial you into exactly what Jeremy, Caleb, I, Arthur, and all of us are dealing with right now. But we need you, okay? Not just a single email. You got to do it. We've got this in the right position. We are so much further down the field right now than what we were last session. You can give no promises in politics, but we're there. And they realize we're the most reasonable people they're going to deal with on eminent domain reform. So this is a very, very viable possibility that, frankly, is going to change the industry and change its practices. But it really won't happen unless you all sort of get to the point where Arthur Uhl got a call a week ago and said, by the way, I don't know what you had planned as a busy lawyer, but you're going to be sitting in the lieutenant governor's office for about 3 days. Feel lucky you don't have to do that, but we need you to do that. Yes, ma'am.
Are there names on these House bills and Senate bills or numbers or what?
Senate Bill 421, SB 421, or HB 991. You bet. HB 991. Representative Burns is the author. Senate Bill 421, Senator Kolkhorst.
Senator what?
Kolkhorst from Brenham. Pull them down. I'd go to the Senate side, pull the Senate bill, look at the committee substitute, pull it down, and study it. It's not as hard to read as you think. But again, call somebody. Call somebody and tell them. You don't have to be ugly, be professional, but be firm. Because they'll sort of smile and nod and say, oh, we understand, we understand. I'm a private property rights representative. I'm a private property rights senator. Tell them you mean business and tell them you're paying attention. And tell them you're a member of this organization. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, it does. I mean, I prefer calling, but Jamie's right. You can email, right? You can email before you eat lunch here today. But the other side, the way it goes, what he's pointing at is that the number of lobbyists and companies in the oil and gas and the pipeline industry, you can't count them. And so if every one of their people sends an email, that's a flood. So we need you to do that because numbers count, right? You don't have to write five paragraphs. You tell them who you are, where you're from, that you're an operator in this county, and that you are aware of Senate Bill 421, and you want them to pursue that to the end because you need to see that pass. But do it, do it, do it. And when you get home, get your neighbors to do it. Because we've all been cussing and discussing this for a decade. And we're there to get it done, but we have to have you all to help us finish the game.
Well, Jamie, there we go. Jamie, I was going to mention, when you talk about the email, we went, now, this was kind of earlier on, right about the time the committee sub got passed out, we said, Senator Colcourse goes, are y'all doing anything about getting people to call in? We said, yes, we've got a couple of different phases. We have a call-in section, like Jim was talking about, where we're trying to get people to dial in and talk to their state rep and talk to their state senator. We're also doing an email campaign. And I said, you know, that just started a couple of days ago. At that time, she had received 12 emails from property owners in support of Senate Bill 421. She had received 75 that same day from people sending it from Texas Oil and Gas Association. 75 to 12 is what our letter count was. Now, Jeremy's looking up what, if see if he can get the diagnostics on where we are now, and do you have a number? Emails. So we've sent 1,345 emails to the legislative body. But let me tell you, the oil and gas industry and the pipeline industry have sent a whole lot of emails as well. Ms. Groves.
Well, we don't all have everybody's emails or even know where to find them. I might have them, I'm not sure. But you do have something that you can hand out here that has a list of the senators.
Yes, ma'am, and we can, and the question is do we have a way to get the emails of those elected officials that we can email?
Well, just let us know how to contact these people, because they don't have y'all are in Austin, you know all this stuff. We don't, we're
right
out there, and I know more than a lot of people.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
On the state. And what we can do is we can look at sending another email like we did a week or so ago. And what that email did is that sent out to the entire TSCRA membership, and it said, click here. And when you click there, it automatically knew where you lived, who your state senator was, who your state representative was. And so when you click there, it would. Yes, ma'am. We can get a list to you.
And that's pretty easy to do. You can have it here, announce it, where you can pick it up.
Yes, ma'am.
You can pick it up before we leave. Or if you want to tell us some outfit that we have sometimes that isn't here, well, then tell us.
Yes, ma'am. We'll get right on that.
Richard, do you have a question? We will get that. Because if you all promise me that you'll contact them, I'll do whatever it takes to get you the place to contact. All right? I will make that deal.
Just me. I'm
I understand that, but I mean, if it takes me to call everybody in here, I'm willing to strike the deal. I'll tell you what the email is if you will use it. Yes, Richard.
I'll tell you strategically why we need an agreement. And again, it's still, it could happen. What I'm hopeful of is we get bill language back. We were supposed to get it back yesterday. I guess we'll get it back today or tomorrow.
We're waiting on it right now.
We're waiting on it, watching our emails. And once we get that bill language back, we're hopeful that the other side will look at it and at least say, we don't oppose it. If that happens, that's when we have the leverage we need when it gets over to the House. Because if it gets over to the House with everyone being quote-unquote okay with it, and it goes to Tom Craddock's committee, who is from Midland, former Speaker of the House, very much an oil and gas man, and he, for some reason, has given us a runaround, we have the leverage we need to go to Speaker Bonin and say, you said, you told Tom Craddock to give us a fair shake, and we have a letter right here that everybody agrees, and we're still getting the runaround, and we're still being asked to give, and we're still being asked to negotiate, and that's not the deal. And so we have leverage with the Speaker to help us get that push along. If, like you say, Richard, if that does not happen, all of a sudden, yeah, we're in a position to where we have bill language over in the House, and they're going to continue to try to whittle because the other side doesn't agree. And so they're going to continue to try to negotiate. I think it's incumbent upon everyone in this room, every one of the 17,500 members that we have, to make sure you call your state representative, email your state representative and said, look, we've given. We negotiated in good faith. We negotiated towards an agreement. This is the language we've got. Both sides are hurting. You can't make us give anymore. We expect you, as your constituents, to stand up for the property owners that put you in office and make sure that this bill gets out in one piece. Unfortunately, that's the best option that we have. Yes, ma'am. And we've actually got policy that we've passed a couple of years ago.
I want to make one more on Richard's point here. One thing, I mean, the most worthless thing in the Capitol is a promise. But as the industry got worried, they made their play to the lieutenant governor, right? And so that's fine to use that leverage. But as they made that play, they've wrapped themselves in this bill. Right? They've asked for things, but now they're getting themselves in a room that may be a little hard to back out of. So I think there will still be difficulties over on the House, and that's why we need you to contact any House member, Speaker Bonin, anyway. Make some noise, make some polite noise. But there is a reality taking shape as the industry has realized this is real this time. They are beginning to sort of be covered up with this thing that may be very difficult. Yes, sir.
Last question.
Texas, I don't pay for
Jim, let me address that. That's going to be the last question, and then we're going to wrap it up because we're already running a little long. We dealt with an issue along of licensing landmen and doing those types of things to being able to talk about jerking a license or holding them accountable. The problem is that got so they wanted to put everything over there into educating landmen and doing all this other stuff, which really took it out of the responsibility of the real responsible party, and that is the pipeline company that's putting out there and condemning. Because they're going to hire somebody else to do it, and it basically shuffles off all their real responsibility to do something right to somebody else. And they say, oh, well, it just means, you know, a really bad landman. Although what's going on is we just don't have a level playing field. And so that may be an issue that we talk about in the future about, you know, those types of things, but we had to pare it down to the three core principles that we were dealing with. And you're right, we probably need something like that in the future. I think what you've gotten from this is that engage. Engage, engage, engage. Talk to your senator. Talk to your state rep. Call the lieutenant governor. If you got a relationship with anybody up there, you tell them this is the most important thing that we've got going, and we need you to show up and be for us. With that, we're going to close out today. Thank you all very much for being here. God bless you. Take care.